obey what was said to them. The Entwives ordered them to grow according to their wishes, and bear leaf and fruit to their liking. For the Entwives desired order, and plenty, and peace, by which they meant that things should remain where they had set them. So the Entwives made gardens to live in, but we Ents went on wandering, and we only came to the gardens now and again. Then when the darkness came in the north, the Entwives crossed the great river and made new gardens, and tilled new fields, and we saw them more seldom. After the darkness was overthrown, the land of the Entwives blossomed richly, and their fields were full of corn. Many men learned the crafts of the Entwives and honoured them greatly, but we were only a legend to them, a secret in the heart of the forest. Yet here we still are, while all the gardens of the Entwives are wasted. Men call them the Brownlands now. I remember it was long ago, in the time of the war between Sauron and the Men of the Sea, the Zaya came over me to see Fimbraethel again. Very fair she was still in my eyes, when I had last seen her, though little like the Entmaiden of old. For the Entwives were bent and browned by their labour, their hair parched by the sun to the hue of ripe corn, and their cheeks like red apples. Yet their eyes were still the eyes of our own people. We crossed over Anduin and came to their land, but we found a desert. It was all burned and uprooted, for war had passed over it. But the Entwives were not there. Long we called, and long we searched, and we asked all folk that we met which way the Entwives had gone. Some said they had never seen them, and some said that they had seen them walking away west, and some said east, and others south. But nowhere that we went could we find them. Our sorrow was very great. Yet the wildwood called, and we returned to it. For many years we used to go out every now and again and look for the Entwives, looking far and wide and calling them by their beautiful names. But as time passed, we went more seldom and wandered less far. And now the Entwives are only a memory for us, and our beards are long and grey. The elves made many songs concerning the search of the Ents, and some of the songs passed into the tongues of men. But we made no songs about it, being content to chant their beautiful names when we thought of the Entwives. We believe that we may meet again in a time to come, and perhaps we shall find somewhere a land where we can live together and both be content. But it is foreboded that that will only be when we have both lost all that we now have. And it may well be that that time is drawing near at last. For if Sauron of old destroyed the gardens, the enemy today seems likely to wither all the woods. There was an elvish song that spoke of this, or at least so I understand it. It used to be sung up and down the great river. It was never an Entish song, mark you. It would have been a very long song in Entish, but we know it by heart and hum it now and again. This is how it runs in your tongue. The Ent sings, when spring unfolds the beechen leaf and sap is in the bough, when light is on the wildwood stream and wind is on the brow, when stride is long and breath is deep and keen the mountain air, come back to me, come back to me, and say my land is fair. And the Entwife replies, when spring is come to garth and field, and corn is in the blade, when blossom like a shining snow is on the orchard laid, when shower and sun upon the earth with fragrance fill the air, I linger here and will not come, because my land is fair. So the Ent sings,
When summer lies upon the world, and in a noon of gold, beneath the roof of sleeping leaves, the dreams of trees unfold. When woodland halls are green and cool, and wind is in the west, come back to me, come back to me, and say my land is best. And the Entwife replies, when summer warms the hanging fruit and burns the berry brown, when straw is gold and ear is white and harvest comes to town, when honey spills and apple swells, the wind be in the west, I'll linger here beneath the sun, because my land is best. When wind comes, the winter wild, that hill and wood shall slay, when trees shall fall and starless night devour the sunless day, when wind is in the deadly east, then in the bitter rain, I look for thee and call to thee, I'll come to thee again. When winter comes and singing ends, when darkness falls at last, when broken is the barren bough, and light and labor past, I'll look for thee and wait for thee until we meet again. Together we will take the road beneath the bitter rain. Together we will take the road that leads into the west, and far away we'll find a land where both our hearts may rest.
Treebeard ended his song.
That is how it goes, he said. It is elvish, of course, light-hearted, quick-worded, and soon over. I dare say it is fair enough, but the Ents could say more on their side if they had time. But now I am going to stand up and take a little sleep. Where will you stand?
We usually lie down to sleep, said Merry. We shall be all right where we are.
Lie down to sleep, said Treebeard. Why, of course you do. I was forgetting. Singing that song put me in mind of old times. Almost thought that I was talking to young Entings, I did. Well, you can lie on the bed. I'm going to stand in the rain. Good night.
Merry and Pippin climbed onto the bed and curled up in the soft grass and fern. It was fresh and sweet-scented and warm. The lights died down and the glow of the trees faded, but outside, under the arch, they could see old Treebeard standing, motionless, with his arms raised above his head. The bright stars peered out of the sky, and lit the falling water as it spilled onto his fingers and head, and dripped, dripped, in hundreds of silver drops onto his feet. Listening to the tinkling of the drops, the hobbits fell asleep. They woke to find a cool sun shining into the great court and onto the floor of the bay. Shreds of high cloud were overhead, running on a stiff easterly wind. Treebeard was not to be seen, but while Merry and Pippin were bathing in the basin by the arch, they heard him humming and singing as he came up the path between the trees.
"Ho, ho! Good morning, Merry and Pippin," he boomed when he saw them. "You sleep long. I've been many a hundred strides already today. Now we will have a drink and go to Entmoot."
He poured them out two full bowls from a stone jar, but from a different jar. The taste was not the same as it had been the night before.
It was earthier and richer, more sustaining and food-like, so to speak. While the hobbits drank, sitting on the edge of the bed and nibbling small pieces of elf cake, more because they felt that eating was a necessary part of breakfast than because they felt hungry, Treebeard stood, humming in Entish or Elvish or some strange tongue, and looking up at the sky. "Where is Entmoot?" Pippin ventured to ask.
"Who? Eh? Entmoot?" said Treebeard, turning round. "It is not a place. It is a gathering of Ents, which does not happen often nowadays. But I have managed to make a fair number promise to come. We shall meet in the place where we have always met. Durn Dingle, men call it. It is a way south from here. We must be there before noon."
Before long they set off. Treebeard carried the hobbit in his arms as on the previous day. At the entrance to the court he turned to the right, stepped over the stream, and strode away southwards along the feet of great tumbled slopes where trees were scanty. Above these the hobbit saw thickets of birch and rowan, and beyond them dark climbing pine woods. Soon Treebeard turned a little away from the hills and plunged into deep groves, where the trees were larger, taller, and thicker than any that the hobbits had ever seen before. For a while they felt faintly the sense of stifling which they had noticed when they first ventured into Fangorn, but it soon passed. Treebeard did not talk to them. He hummed to himself deeply and thoughtfully, but Merry and Pippin caught no proper words. It sounded like boom, boom, rum-boom, boo-da, boom-boom, da-da-boom-boom, da-da-boom, and so on with a constant change of note and rhythm. Now and again they thought they heard an answer, a hum or a quiver of sound that seemed to come out of the earth, or from boughs above their heads, or perhaps from the boles of the trees. But Treebeard did not stop or turn his head to either side. They had been going for a long while. Pippin had tried to keep count of the Ent strides, but had failed, getting lost at about 3,000, when Treebeard began to slacken his pace. Suddenly he stopped, put the hobbits down, and raised his curled hands to his mouth, so that they made a hollow tube. Then he blew or called through them. A great hum, hum, rang out like a deep-throated horn in the woods, and seemed to echo from the trees. Far off there came from several directions a similar hum, hum, hum. That was not an echo, but an answer. Treebeard now perched Merry and Pippin on his shoulders, and strode on again, every now and then sending out another horn call, and each time the answers came louder and nearer. In this way they came at last to what looked like an impenetrable wall of dark evergreen trees, trees of a kind that the hobbits had never seen before. They branched out right from the roots, and were densely clad in dark, glossy leaves like thornless holly, and they bore many stiff, upright flower spikes with large, shining, olive-coloured buds. Turning to the left and skirting this huge hedge, Treebeard came in a few strides to a narrow entrance. Through it a worn path passed, and dived suddenly down a long, steep slope. The hobbits saw that they were descending into a great dingle, almost as round as a bowl, very wide and deep, crowned at the rim with a high, dark, evergreen hedge. It was smooth and grass-clad inside, and there were no trees except three very tall and beautiful silver birches that stood at the bottom of the bowl. Two other paths led down into the dingle, from the west and from the east. Several Ents had already arrived. More were coming in down the other paths, and some were now following Treebeard. As they drew near, the hobbits gazed at them. They had expected to see a number of creatures as much like Treebeard as one hobbit is like another, at any rate to a stranger's eye, and they were very much surprised to see nothing of the kind. The Ents were as different from one another as trees from trees, some as different as one tree is from another of the same name, but quite different growth and history, and some as different as one tree kind from another, as birch from beech, oak from fir. There were a few older Ents, bearded and gnarled like hale but ancient trees, though none looked as ancient as Treebeard.
and there were tall, strong Ents, clean-limbed and smooth-skinned like forest trees in their prime. But there were no young Ents, no saplings. Altogether, there were about 24 standing on the wide, grassy floor of the dingle, and as many more were marching in. At first, Merry and Pippin were struck chiefly by the variety that they saw, the many shapes and colours, the differences in girth and height, and length of leg and arm, and in the number of toes and fingers, anything from 3 to 9. A few seemed more or less related to Treebeard, and reminded them of beech trees or oaks. But there were other kinds. Some recalled the chestnut, brown-skinned Ents with large, splay-fingered hands and short, thick legs. Some recalled the ash, tall, straight grey Ents with many-fingered hands and long legs. Some the fir, the tallest Ents, and others the birch, the rowan, and the linden. But when the Ents all gathered round Treebeard, bowing their heads slightly, murmuring in their slow, musical voices, and looking long and intently at the strangers, then the hobbits saw that they were all of the same kindred, and all had the same eyes. Not all so old or so deep as Treebeard's, but all with the same slow, steady, thoughtful expression, and the same green flicker. As soon as the whole company was assembled, standing in a wide circle round Treebeard, a curious and unintelligible conversation began. The Ents began to murmur slowly. First one joined and then another, until they were all chanting together in a long rising and falling rhythm, now louder on one side of the ring, now dying away there and rising to a great boom on the other side. Though he could not catch or understand any of the words, he supposed the language was Entish. Pippin found the sound very pleasant to listen to at first, but gradually his attention wavered. After a long time, and the chant showed no signs of slackening, he found himself wondering, since Entish was such an unhasty language, whether they had yet got further than good morning, and if Treebeard was to call the roll, how many days it would take to sing all their names. "I wonder what the Entish is for yes or no," he thought. He yawned. Treebeard was immediately aware of him.
"Hey, my Pippin," he said,
and the other Ents all stopped their chant.
"You are a hasty folk, I was forgetting, and anyway it is wearisome listening to a speech you do not understand. You may get down now. I've told your names to the Entmoot, and they have seen you, and they have agreed that you are not orcs, and that a new line shall be put in the old lists. We have got no further yet, but that is quick work for an Entmoot. Now you and Merry can stroll about in the dingle, if you like. There is a well of good water, if you need refreshing, away yonder in the north bank. There are still some words to speak before the moot really begins. I will come and see you again, and tell you how things are going."
He put the hobbits down. Before they walked away, they bowed low. This feat seemed to amuse the Ents very much, to judge by the tone of their murmurs and the flicker of their eyes, but they soon turned back to their own business. Merry and Pippin climbed up the path that came in from the west and looked through the opening in the great hedge. Long tree-clad slopes rose from the lip of the dingle, and away beyond them, above the fir trees of the furthest ridge there rose, sharp and white, the peak of a high mountain. Southwards to the left they could see the forest falling away down into the grey distance. There far away there was a pale green glimmer that Merry guessed to be a glimpse of the plains of Rohan.
"I wonder where Isengard is," said Pippin.
"I don't know quite where we are," said Merry, "but that peak is probably Methaedras, and as far as I can remember, the ring of Isengard lies in a fork or deep cleft at the end of the mountains. It is probably down behind this great ridge.
There seems to be a smoke or haze over there, left of the peak, don't you think?"
"What is Isengard like?" said Pippin. "I wonder what Ents can do about it anyway."
"So do I," said Merry.
"Isengard is a sort of ring of rocks or hills, I think,
with a flat space inside and an island or pillar of rock in the middle called Orthanc. Saruman has a tower on it.